You're listening to the TV Obsessive Channel, presented by TVObsessive.com.
Hello, welcome back to the TV Obsessive Podcast, episode 49. I am Ryan Kirksey, writer and contributor for TVObsessive.com, joined by Cameron Crane, executive editor. Cameron, our mission is not over. We still must keep podcasting. How are you today?
Doing pretty well. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing great. Really great.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Sugar, episode 7, latter part of the pod, which I enjoyed. Yeah, I don't know why I feel like I enjoyed it. Anyway, we'll get there. A lot of stuff in the news about Sugar all of a sudden. So I like hopefully hopefully that means more people will start watching it if they haven't already, and you know, all of that. I do think it's a good show. But yeah, so as per usual, first half of the pod, we're gonna talk a bit about what's been in the news this week. As I mentioned to Ryan, I had more things than are gonna fit, so I culled the list a little bit.
Yeah, all the light news weeks from the last month or so piling up on us.
Right. I thought the last couple of weeks we didn't have all that much and scraping the bottom of the barrel. And this week I was ignoring some things as per usual. And then I had a list of like 10 things and then I cut it down to what, five. So anyway, let's get to it. It's May 10th, 2024. What caught your eye this week, Brian?
Well, let's start with I can finally plan my month of June. And I don't mean vacation. I don't mean, you know, anything other than how many hours I'm going to sit in front of the television, because we have a date for The Bear. We're going to get all of season 3 on June 27th. So we kind of have to work this in now with Star Wars coming, House of the Dragon coming. Towards the end of the month, we're going to get The Bear, all of season 3. As we suspected, all at one time. We got a teaser from Jeremy Allen White. Tells us nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
We just know that they're going to be running a restaurant. That's what they're doing.
Absolutely nothing. Like, I don't even think it's footage from the show.
No.
I struggled to watch it too. It's like I said, there was a teaser. I was like, where's the teaser? And it's because like he posted it on Instagram and I don't understand Instagram. And, you know, it was a whole thing. And then I finally watched it. I was like, he's got knives. All right.
They're in Chicago. Surprise.
Yeah. Really excited for The Bear season 3. We'll have to figure out how to cover it on the pod. I presume we want to. We're both into the show. We did last season. We split season 2 into 2 parts. Maybe we'll do that again. We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll do something else. I don't know. Yeah. It's a difficulty because they do release it all at once and they're never going to stop. I read something and I forget. I don't have the name of the guy in front of me, but you know, exec for FX on Hulu or whatever, you know, at some conference panel, and someone asked, and he said, well, you know, we looked at the numbers the first time around. We're like, wow, lots of people are on the last episode of the season a day after it came out. So we decided to do it again. And we're just, that's what people expect. We're not going to switch it up. And, you know, it's like, meanwhile, on social media, it's like hordes of people are going like, don't make us watch this stressful show all in one day. Please.
I know.
Please extend it out. Please.
Yes. All of us content people need it stretched out as well, but it's going to fall on deaf ears, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. Like part of me even thinks, well, we could go out one episode at a time anyway, but we're going to watch all of it before. We're not going to wait to watch it. Like
no
that.
Way.
So, you know, I don't know. We'll figure it out, but definitely looking forward to that. June 27th. Got the teaser.
Yes.
Coming a little bit earlier in June, of course, House of the Dragon. No real new news on that, but there is some other Game of Thrones news. This other show they're going to make, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yep.
Apparently this is a little further along than I thought.
Yeah, this surprised me in the fact that they have not only, we know that they've had actors attached to it. They look like they have quite a progressed script. They might be even getting close to a date. But yeah, they're going to, you know, I don't know what the timeline of this will be. They won't want to obviously have it compete with House of the Dragon, but this may be like a eventually we're getting in every 6 months Thrones content.
Yeah, I mean, the headline I read, this Hollywood Reporter article, was about Owen Harris, who's directed some Black Mirror, being signed on as director. I don't know if that means for the whole thing or just some of it. Who knows? but it might be for the whole thing, because the other detail that was in there is apparently the season's only going to be six episodes.
Yeah, this is for those not familiar, this short story called the Hedge Knight is, I mean, obviously much, much, much shorter than any of his other books, right? I'm in, reading Fire and Blood right now. I think that's 800 pages. A lot of his Song of Ice and Fire books are 700 to 900 pages. So this is like 150 page or short story for him. And so they're gonna adapt it. Much shorter seasons, try to maybe stretch it out over two or three, maybe four if they can get it. But interesting story, sort of set in between the time frame of House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones. And so we should get that maybe the next year or so.
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, and I think, yeah, I think they're saying something like 100 years before Game of Thrones, or that's interesting. Probably I'll watch it. Probably I'll check it out. But I mean, the biggest thing for me that makes me think it's pretty far along is the fact they're actually telling us a number of episodes.
Exactly. So
So,
they
I
have a
mean,
script, they have a plan, they have storyboards, they have a lot of things to be able to give that type of information so far.
yeah, one would think. Let's see what else we got. Number of things. Let's talk about the Office spinoff. We
Yeah,
both
we
had
got
this
some
noted.
definitely got some information coming there. We had some casting news a week or two ago. Now we know the general plot, which is the same documentary crew that followed the Dunder Mifflin Scranton office for 10 years is going to apparently be making a documentary about a small Midwestern paper newspaper that is
Yeah.
failing and trying to survive on volunteer journalists. So more about the, I guess, the struggling paper industry and media ethics. We're gonna get a lot of stuff in this.
Yeah, I think we knew that it was going to be this. That was going to be the connection. Same documentary film crew or
Yeah.
whatever. Which, okay. What do you think about this idea of it being about a struggling newspaper?
Yeah, so I guess I don't know how much sort of meta commentary they were trying to provide back in 2005 when The Office started about the state of certain industries. I mean, obviously they're focusing on something where, I mean, and not just newspapers, but a lot of news-driven organizations are just dying. They're just, they're failing to bankrupt right now. And so why they're focusing on that, not exactly sure. I don't know if it'll be some sort of commentary on, how we adapt and digest news and what is truth and all of this stuff in the state of journalism. But maybe that's why they're going this route. But yeah, they're just taking on another dying industry like they did, what, 15, 20 years ago now.
Yeah, I hope it's good, but I have to say, this worries me. This doesn't sound to me like it's going to be good. I don't know if this is scars from season five of The Wire, which is pretty good, but it was the worst season of The Wire. I think we can all agree on that. Like, it's still pretty good, but it's not as good as every other season. Why? Part of it is because they go in the newsroom, it's ham-fisted, and I just don't know if you can do it well. You know, and then this idea of they're going to get volunteer journalists or whatever. I mean, there's a lot about this premise that makes me sad. You know, it makes me sad that local newspapers are dying, and the idea that journalists can't make a living, and that then you're going to get volunteer journalists. What does that mean? Is this something going on in the world? I almost don't. I don't know.
This was the thing that sort of caught my attention, which is, again, what kind of commentary or statement are they trying to make with this when it's been so difficult for writers of all kinds to make any kind of living? Their jobs are being eliminated, their jobs are being outsourced to some just sort of news service or AI generation. So what they're trying to do here and what they're trying to say with the volunteer reporters, I can't say yet, but yeah, you're right. It's not ringing with me just yet.
Doesn't feel like The Office either, which I mean, that's it's not The Office, you know, but in terms of what we're talking about, I feel like if this is the premise, they have to be trying to say something. It's not going to work if there's no message like that, you know, which I don't feel like The Office had a message like that, the American Office. I mean, you could similarly say, you know, the industry of selling paper was also, you know, on the decline, but that doesn't have big political stakes.
And
Journalism,
they don't Other than the episode where Michael Scott goes to business school, they don't really reference it that much in the show.
Right, it's just that's what's in the background,
Yeah.
right? So we'll see. Fingers crossed it'll be good.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed they've got a really good idea here. Greg Daniels has done a lot of good work. So, maybe it'll work out, but I don't know. I'm just reading about it, I have a feeling of like, well, that'll have one season and get canceled. I don't know, not to be too negative, but I just, I don't know about this premise.
We'll see. It's a wait and see approach, my friend.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Cutting to something that's, kind of a bummer. Go to that. I don't know. Are you a fan of Brian Fuller?
Yeah, I think it, and I know where you're headed with this. Brian Fuller has done some actually really good things. Before he has, I think it, I'm correct in saying he's most maybe most done recently for Hannibal, right, which was a very well done show, a show that nobody really thinks is dead yet. But he is associated with that show, and now the show he was going to be a part of looks like he's off.
Yeah, it looks like they're still going to do it, but not with him.
Yeah,
So,
what's the show? We haven't referenced it yet.
yeah, we haven't said yet. There have been plans in the works for a Friday the 13th prequel series, which at least had the working title Crystal Lake. And I don't know how people feel about that. It's like potentially what we're going to see Jason before he was Jason, that sort of thing. And
Yeah, the teenage boy version of him and his mother who are around killing campers, I guess.
well, maybe, I don't know. I mean, like, as we referenced previously on the podcast, we watched Bates Motel and that was good. So like there's
Yes.
definitely a chance Brian Fuller's attached. All right, now you piqued my interest personally. Not just from Hannibal before that, Pushing Daisies, I thought it was a great show, also canceled. And that's the thing, Brian Fuller, his shows just always get canceled. And so I don't know, maybe the network execs are wary of that. And I just can't help but have this feeling like, oh man, he probably had a really cool idea for this series. And that's why
Yeah.
they got rid of him because they thought it was too risky or something.
Yeah, maybe taking it as a certain direction that you did I see this right? They're putting it on Peacock, right? So I guess they have some sort of sentimentality or something that they have to keep a track of to be able to, we can't just go full on gore this show. We can't go, I don't
It
know.
all it was always very striking to think about the fact that Hannibal was on NBC.
Yeah, that's right.
Hannibal was on NBC. Like, people might not even realize this if you're watching it streaming or something now, but it was on NBC. I think they put it at like 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And you watch that show, you're like, whoa, there's some dark stuff going on in Hannibal. I loved Hannibal. I thought it was great. So who knows? I guess at this point, the Friday the 13th prequel series is still in production, but it doesn't have a showrunner.
Yeah.
So that's another thing to keep an eye out for. Do
Yeah,
they get
he's
a
it.
new showrunner? And, it's definitely possible at this point it ends up getting scrapped.
Yeah, his exact words were on his Instagram post, A24 has elected to go a different way with the material. So not that it's been scrapped, not that it's been canceled, not that it's on the shelf, but just they're moving a different direction. So maybe with some delays, this is still coming. But yeah, I mean, he makes a good point in this post that the person attached to this is going to really set the tone and make it what it is. The actors, I'm sure they'll be great and they'll be fine, but who can adapt this or create a story that's interesting enough to make a prequel worth watching? That really matters in a show like this.
And I also saw something where he said, a TV show is a collaborative project. It's one thing to have a vision. People have to be invested into it and so on and
Yeah.
so forth. So it very much read to me like he had an idea of what he wanted to
Yes.
do with this show. And it's come to a point where probably, and I'm speculating,
Yeah.
the network heads, whatever muckety-mucks, are saying, you know what, Brian? That's too weird. That's just a guess. But I mean, based on his previous work and so on and so forth, a grounded guess, as it were, right? That he got. He's getting
And
too weird with it.
I think the why this may be so disappointing when I read this is maybe in my mind, I thought these streamers were a pathway to let some of these people do the more off the wall creative, don't have to confine it to the 21 minutes and 42 second format, and let them have these ideas. The people that are creative storytellers, people that are good storytellers, let them do that. But where they're still sort of seems like they're put in a box sometimes. We don't know the details here, but there certainly were some creative differences that why this happened.
Yeah, we're definitely veering into speculation about it. But anyway,
Yeah.
best of luck to Brian Fuller. Best of luck to the Friday the 13th prequel series. On a much more positive note, we talked previously on the pod about this show that was independently produced by Duplass Brothers Productions, called Penelope. They were shopping around the festivals and whatever. And it looks like it's been picked up. It's going to be distributed by Netflix. But it's also really interesting to me all the background details, right? The fact that they made the show themselves, they made the whole show, they weren't just shopping a pilot. They made a distribution deal with Netflix now, but they retain the rights internationally and it's licensed to Netflix for, I don't know, several years or whatever. But they've retained ownership of it such that if Netflix says, we don't want this anymore, they'll take it back and can do whatever they want with it, I guess. Or maybe Netflix will love it, it'll be a big hit, and they'll make more of it after that at Netflix. Who knows? But it's kind of unique in its production.
Yeah, I would say this article that we'll post to from the Hollywood Reporter, both of the Duplass brothers are quoted here. They both are kind of no holds barred on exactly what happened here. They talk about the insane process, lots of different kinds of offers, but also just say something like, "We've absolved Netflix of the responsibility of, making this their primary show. We're signing a very short deal with them just so we can be there, and then maybe we'll go do other things." It kind of is this under the radar for a state of the industry interview that they give
Yeah.
here as to how this worked and what some limitations are and what they did like and didn't like. Very, very interesting to sort of see that. I mean, great that it's found a place to be distributed. And they're just clearly not trying to be too tied down to some sort of long scope deal with one place.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of them and what they do. I can't say that I've said I've seen everything. I wrote on the final season of Room 104, which was on HBO. Kind of a bummer that that was the final season. I wish they would make more. Did you ever watch Room
No, I've
104?
never seen that.
So this is a Duplass Brothers production, but it varies a bit. It's an anthology show, and it varies even in genre a bit, with the through line of all the stories take place in Room 104 of this motel, basically. But their ethos really shines through there too, because they'd always be bringing in different writers, different directors, and different actors. And there was a lot of a feeling of giving people a shot at, Julian Loss has been writing the music, has never directed before. Let's let him direct an episode, right? And a lot of cool stuff like that. I'm just kind of a big fan of everything they do in terms of the spirit behind it. And then also this Penelope show looks like it might be really good.
That's right. Yeah. Written during COVID. Interesting sort of plot lines but behind it. Yeah, they do talk a lot in here, kind of to your point before that about job creation and an ecosystem coming out of the things that they do. And it just, yeah, this is one of the ones just easy to root for. Glad that it's going to be going somewhere.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that they're talking about, hey, can indie television be a thing? Independent film has been a thing, in a way where you say, okay, well, however you scrap together the money or whatever, we're going to make a film, feature length film, even. You can be like Kevin Smith made Clerks, I believe, by running up credit cards, you do that. But the idea of independent television, you've had some. But usually it's like they make a pilot and then they're trying to shop the pilot. You don't have a lot of this kind of thing that they've done here, which is to actually make the investment to make a whole season of a show that they believe in, and go from there. And they certainly seem interested in potentially helping to give others that opportunity as well. So this could be a really interesting thing moving forward. And I definitely wish them the best in this
Yeah,
endeavor.
definitely. Definitely rooting for this for sure. Oh,
Oh.
yeah, a couple of upbeat off the wall things, as it were.
Yeah.
How about we referenced Star Wars earlier and the Acolyte coming. What about Star Wars Lego? There's a new Lego movie coming in the fall.
Yes, and the headline in my mind is
Yes.
Darth Jar Jar
This is
is now
getting
canon.
all the publicity. Yes.
Canon. Jar Jar Binks was a Sith Lord.
Yeah,
Now
this is.
canon. You've been familiar with this fan theory over the years?
No.
Oh, do you have it? Oh, man.
Did Jar Jar is a Sith Lord all along?
Yeah, there's been this fan theory on the internet for, I mean, I don't know how long. Try look
Yeah.
up some stuff after we're
Yeah.
done, or when you have a moment of people laying out this interpretation of the Phantom Menace,
Yeah.
right? That, oh, maybe the real Phantom Menace is Jar Jar Binks, and he's
Oh boy.
all along he's like secretly a Sith Lord, and he's just playing dumb and tricking our heroes and all of this. There's like worked out fan theory about it, I've been aware of for some time, and of course I think that's an absolutely awful movie, but I love the fan theory as an attempt to redeem it. Like, ah,
Yes.
this is interesting.
So I did see, I mean, the trailer for this is great, right? It's kind of like this, things have gone wrong in the galaxy far, far away, and whoever these new heroes are have to put it back together. But Ahmed Best is back to voice Jar Jar as Sith Jar Jar Binks. This guy is sort of having a career renaissance, not career renaissance, but sort of a character renaissance, in that he had so much hate come his way after those first couple of movies. And then there was sort of like this, maybe we're taking it too hard on this guy. So he had a cameo role in the Ahsoka show as a Jedi, right? So sort of propped him up as this hero, and now he's back playing Jar Jar again in this. This is a limited series, I guess, or I didn't quite catch
I
if
think
it's a
it's four
show.
parts, so
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
yeah, it's like a limited series, Lego Star Wars, and yeah, good for him as far as I mean, he never deserved
Right,
to take
exactly.
all the crap for this. But you blame George Lucas,
Yeah.
I mean, the actor didn't create the character or
That's
write the
right.
lines. Anyhow, this does look fun,
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. Yeah.
and while I want to insist that this means Darth Jar Jar is canon.
Yes.
It actually doesn't. Because the whole premise is something like, oh, everything got mixed up, and it's like a kind of almost like a mirror universe Star
Yeah.
Trek episode
So
kind of deal.
somebody
And
put all the Legos back in a box and shook it up and came out not how they wanted it, so they put it back
yeah,
together.
and then the story is going to be to like get things
Yeah.
back in order. But I do appreciate clearly the makers of this are aware of the Jar Jar Binks as a Sith Lord fan theory, and they're winking at that here,
Yes.
giving him a
Oh,
nod.
100% right. Yeah, that's 100% right.
So
Another
that's
little
fun.
Disney product. I presume back in the day, because everyone in the entire world did, you watched a little bit of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, who didn't back in 99, 2000 turn on Regis to see who won it? I did notice, and this is great, for the 25th anniversary this summer in July, they're bringing this show back with Jimmy Kimmel. He did a version of it, I think, in 2020 and 2021. But this just got me. I'm glad to do it. I'm sure I'll watch some of it. It was a very interesting show. Good sort of tough trivia questions. But this just triggered a memory about the first $1 million winner. You remember this guy, John Carpenter, what he did?
I do. And this ties into something I watched this past week, actually, which I'll go ahead and make the connection now. I was watching this, I think it's four-part documentary, docu-series called The Game Show Show.
Yep.
You familiar? Did you
Yes,
watch it? I
this is
haven't seen
something
it.
I definitely wanted to catch. Yes.
Kind of barreled through that and enjoyed it. So, but of course, at one point in there, they talk about precisely this and revisit precisely this and the famous moment where he goes all the way through without using any of his lifelines, right? And then uses the phone a friend on the $1 million question to just say, hey, Dad, I don't need your help. I just want you to let you know I'm about to win $1 million.
And there's apparently a quote from him that says, "Well, I didn't want to go through without using a lifeline because it would make me seem too cocky." And then he uses his lifeline to quote his dad and say,
He
"Dad, guess what? I'm about to win $1 million on
Yeah.
a." Do you remember the question? I had the question pulled up.
I do because I was just watching the game show show.
Okay. So here's the question for those that want it. We'll give you the answer right after. Which of these U.S. presidents appeared on the television series Laugh-In? Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, John Carpenter, the winner. Not that John Carpenter. John Carpenter, the game show winner.
Yeah, not the horror movie director.
Yeah. Calls his dad, says, I'm going to win with this answer. And the answer is Richard Nixon.
So I would have gotten that wrong.
I would have gotten that wrong too. But
I mean, I don't know, wasn't alive for Laugh-In or anything like that. I mean, of course, like I know the answer now from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. But
exactly.
For some reason, I would have guessed like Gerald Ford. I don't know why I would have guessed Gerald Ford.
It does not seem like it would be a Nixon thing to do, but.
Not at all.
There's your millionaire trivia for the day.
Yeah, that's the thing. I definitely wouldn't have guessed Richard Nixon. Wouldn't.
Anyway, coming back in July for 25th anniversary.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. I do like my game shows.
You do.
just one more news item to get this in here. It segs a little bit with the politics thing. We've talked about Jon Stewart a bit on here before and his return to The Daily Show and so on and so forth. He's doing that once a week. And now he's going to start working 2 days a week. That's his joke. But I guess it's true. I don't, anyway, they're going to start putting out a podcast called The Weekly Show.
With yeah.
Jon Stewart. So just thought I'd mention that. Trying to follow up on things that we've talked about before, you know, and that would be one of them. We did talk about in Return to the Daily Show before. So
yeah,
now we're making The Weekly Show.
I've been watching that every Monday, again, not the rest of the week. And I'd say he's kind of been doing two out of every three Mondays. You know, he's definitely on his own schedule doing this stuff right now.
I did read that he's doing Thursday this week instead of Monday.
Okay. That's what it was. I noticed he wasn't on there this week. So maybe I didn't catch it last night. Okay.
I have, with him re-entering the fray, started watching some other Daily Show bits hosted by other people. I think they're all doing a pretty good job. You know? I don't know if coming out of this, any of them are going to claim that job long term. It could be kind of interesting if they just like kept rotating all the time. Yeah. I don't know. That would be a weird thing, because with a show like this, there is that sense of, you know, part of what a talk show plays on, part of what makes it work is that sense of a parasocial relationship between the viewers and the host, right? And that's why, you know, people will refer to the show as Johnny Carson.
Yep.
That wasn't the name of the show.
That's right.
Right? I don't know. I'm blanking now. Was it The Late Show of Johnny Carson or The Tonight Show?
It was Tonight Show, yeah.
It was Tonight Show, yeah. He was on The Tonight Show. And then it becomes, you know, like The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. People were like, I'm going to watch Jay Leno, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it really would be an experiment if they kept rotating indefinitely.
Yeah. I mean, and Jon Stewart, you know, he was popularized through this show right at the tail end before social media. I mean, so he may have been the last one as we had this relationship with people. You could tune in, you know, you had 2000 election, you had 9/11, you had war, you had all this stuff that he was, I mean, all the way through 2012 that he was able to comment on. And he just, you know, you did develop that relationship with him. He may have been the last one to have that. It's just nice to have some of it back.
Yeah. I mean, I think the current late night shows have it to varying degrees, nothing nearly to the extent of like Johnny Carson.
Right.
But, you know, if you're in the habit of watching Seth Meyers all the time, or,
yeah,
you know, you're in the habit of watching, I guess some people probably watch Jimmy Fallon all the time.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Push forward here. So I already mentioned the Game Show. That's on Hulu.
Okay. This I'm definitely going to check out, because I'm a big fan of sort of old game shows. So I'd love to watch this history.
It's kind of interesting. It, so like the first episode is about the old school quiz shows and things like this as things get going, including then the scandals that erupt around it.
Yes.
Which I don't know how familiar you are with these. I was relatively familiar because I've seen the film Quiz Show. Sorry,
yes.
Science.
Yep.
But it's still, you know, interesting. And then I'm trying to remember now. I don't know. Anyway, they've got it split into four episodes, and it works through different kinds of shows. Also, like you get variety shows, stuff about the Gong Show, carrying forward to Survivor and stuff like that, American Idol. So it becomes very expansive in terms of what it thinks of as a game show. And then the last episode is all about like dating shows like The Bachelor.
Oh,
So
okay.
just to note, but like the starting point is your trivia shows, Jeopardy, and all of that, and then kind of moving forward into the development of things like Wheel of Fortune, The Price is Right, and other types of things, and then it gets kind of.
Does it reference in the early episodes the press your luck guy and that scandal? That's my favorite one.
No, it
Oh,
doesn't.
this
It
is
does. They do not go into the Press Your Luck
you
scandal,
remember
actually.
press your luck, like no whammies, no whammies, no whammies show?
I'm familiar with what
This
you're
guy
referring to, the
came, I
scandal.
mean, watched every episode and memorized every iteration of the pattern of how it jumped around and what got on the show. Kind of like these guys that would memorize every price on The Price is Right. He got on the show, won in obscene amounts of money. They figured out, oh my gosh, we got to change this stuff up and make it random because you can literally memorize exactly what we're doing here.
Yeah, they did hit on the Price is Right guy
Yeah.
who memorized the prices and all of that a little bit. But they did not talk about the pressure luck.
Yeah, there are a couple of good documentaries about The Price is Right guy that are really interesting.
Yeah, some interesting stuff there. So, beyond that, I got into, are you familiar with Secret Base?
This is the old SB Nation guys, right?
Yeah, John Boys. Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know. Jumping off point here, yet again, was Pablo Torre finds out. Pablo Torre interviewed John Boys, and I wasn't. It's weird. I used to read SB Nation, but didn't follow the evolution of this. So the Secret Base YouTube channel now, there's a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And when he was on Pablo Torre, he was promoting this new documentary he made on the Reform Party. And I watched the first episode of that, which was quite interesting. But then they've got the rest at this point beyond a paywall on Patreon. They've just launched the Patreon, I guess. So, but I was poking around. I was like, well, what else is on here? I should say first, if people aren't familiar with this at all, what's really distinctive is these documentaries, these YouTube videos, he uses Google Earth. And then, like, kind of wipes it out. He puts graphs and charts and stuff. It's very kind of lo-fi, but clearly a lot of effort goes into this.
Wow,
So you get
okay.
this kind of like bar graphs. If you're watching any of these,
No.
you get these like kind of bar graphs and things that are employed, and then it'll also superimpose images, sometimes snippets from newspapers or photos from newspers. It's really interesting
Interesting.
kind of style to it, and that's part of what's really distinctive here. And I was enjoying that, so I thought, well, what else is on here? So I started watching an 8-part history of the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh
Each
my
part's more than
gosh.
an hour long.
Oh my gosh. That's a lot of purple people eaters.
And I tell you what, though, right? It's fascinating.
Yeah,
And the Vikings are a really interesting team to choose for this. I think they chose it in part because they're fans of the Vikings. They don't say that explicitly, but I'm not. I'm a fan of the Detroit Lions, who are always terrible. The Vikings are always good.
yes.
And that's an interesting starting point, and it gives an interesting entry point into the history of the NFL to take this franchise who from the beginning became pretty good. And then
Right.
early on, we're in the Super Bowl, but lost. And then they just kind of like stay good. And are you aware that, I forget the precise statistic, but it's something like the point differential, maybe it's the win differential, or something like that. I should know what it is if I'm gonna refer to it. Anyway, by this particular metric they mentioned towards the beginning of the documentary,
Yeah.
the Vikings are the third best franchise in NFL history
Oh my gosh.
overall.
Behind, I'm gonna guess behind San Francisco and Dallas.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I believe that's right. Yeah. But it's like, and yet, yeah, spoiler alert, they never won the Super Bowl.
That's right.
Anyhow, so I've been enjoying that. There's all kinds of other stuff on there, so I don't know how far this rabbit hole might go for me.
Interesting. There are some really good YouTube sort of TV channel self-produced stuff out there. At some point, I'm going to earmark this. At some point, we need to talk about on this podcast, Defunct Land. You know Defunct Land?
Oh, I think the name rings a bell, but then I don't have it.
It's basically a guy who started a podcast. Well, it became a podcast, but first it was just 15-minute YouTube videos about all the rides at all the theme parks that no longer exist anymore, right? And it was fascinating, like what happened to him, why I think it shut down, controversies, like one where somebody died. And so it just took on a life of its own, eventually became a podcast in addition to videos. Then he started doing actual series, like about, he did like a several part documentary about Jim Henson, sort of his associate. It just fascinating, fascinating stuff. So just there's some things that we should just compile a list of recommendations of YouTube channels from some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's meaningfully TV when you're talking
Yeah.
about, it's just the form is
That's
YouTube,
right.
it's still TV. You're talking about a multi-part thing. It's got episodes,
Yeah.
Anyhow, our notes say that you watched Squid Game and I
Yes,
Need
I spent the past week sort of catching up on some popular Netflix shows that I had not seen before, one of which was The Night Agent, which is about the most, dad core thing that they have.
Huge hit.
Yeah.
Every you and it's
Massive.
like everyone says, oh, this is a really entertaining show.
Yeah.
And but
Yeah.
from what I've heard, no one says it offers interesting things to think about. It's just like it's a fun, entertaining.
It was definitely entertaining. There were definitely some implausible things. Definitely my favorite line was they're being chased by somebody. They're trying to figure out if they're double crossing them. And the female protagonist says, Occam's razor says you have to, take the simplest angle. In this case, the simplest angle is she's a conniving bitch. Just lines like that. I mean, just great stuff. Great stuff.
That's terrible. That's so terrible. I mean, never mind. You're like kind of poking at one of my pet peeves about the misuse of Occam's razor, but in that one, it's like they know they're misusing it. They have to
Oh yeah.
know.
Oh yeah. No. Great. Great. Oh yeah. Just pure entertainment, most implausible DC politics, that you can ever imagine. But man, just yeah, definitely will keep you watching it. And then speaking of keeping you watching it, finally caught Squid Game, partially because I was just morbidly curious, partially because we know now that a second season is coming this year. But just fell in love with that.
Yeah, did you
The
watch the whole thing?
yes, watch the whole thing.
What? So yeah, what do you think of it? I don't mean to
So
cut you off, sorry.
it was I mean I think that I was a little bit disappointed because I knew what was coming, or I knew the premise of what was about to happen. I found myself thinking, man, I wish I had, before hearing anything about this, watch this, and especially that first episode, right?
Yeah.
When you see what actually is going on there. Did the English subtitles, original language, which was definitely the way to do it.
Definitely.
It just loved it. I mean, absolutely loved it, and found myself thinking, oh man, I'm super glad within 6 months I'm gonna get to see more of this.
Right on. Yeah. I mean, I think I said to you before when we were talking about this when you hadn't seen it yet, I don't know that I really feel like it needs more
Yeah.
narratively. I don't know what they're going to do. I worry about that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a couple articles on the site about Squid Game, one about the whole first season, if people want to read things. But I do think that Squid Game provides really interesting things to talk about in terms of political commentary, commentary on the human
Yep.
condition, all kinds of stuff. And then the way that season one ends, which I'll hold off on, giving any explicit spoilers here, but
Yeah.
the way it ends, I feel like, okay, well, you pretty much wrapped it up. I mean, I guess they do, as I recall, they explicitly kind of leave the door open at the end of season one, but it
Yeah, there's a
doesn't.
very doors open phone call at the end of the season, that would announce that, if we're able to, we're going to take this more places. So yeah, not certainly not surprising.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Squid Game
Yeah.
season two, as I said, I probably will watch it and just have to see what they do. But okay, and let's get to Sugar.
Yes,
Yeah,
sir.
ready for this? So
Ready.
Sugar, episode seven, penultimate episode of the season. Are the friends we keep. So we'll pop in a little bit of music here on the other side of that. We're going to dig in on Sugar episode seven. All spoilers on the table for everything that's happened in this series through this seventh episode. So be aware of that. And we'll see you in about 10 seconds.
Okay, we're back to look at Sugar episode 7. The Friends We Keep, written by Donald Joe and Sam Catlin, directed by Adam Arkin, son of Alan Arkin. You know this, you know Adam Arkin. He's been on many, many things before, most famously for Chicago Hope, I think. Episode 7, Sugar wakes up in the hotel. He's human again. Melanie wants some answers. Not about him being an alien, because apparently he's hidden that all night, but she wants answers about him getting beat up and injured at Stallings' house from the previous episode. Miller shows up before John can say anything. The two escape. Sugar finally, after they drive around, lets Melanie think that he is a, quote, foreign spy whose job is just to observe. Miller does happen to get to Henry, Sugar's contact, first. And as they track them, Sugar's trying to find out why the Polyglot Society does not want him to find Olivia. He tracks them down, ends up at a house where all the society is together. Ruby tells him that the mission is over. They have been called back. But Sugar cannot accept that, can't fathom leaving before he finds Olivia, convinces Henry to give them the address where she is. They knew all along. Henry implies that Sugar might be starting to become too human, too wrapped up in this case. We learn that the reason the aliens don't want her found is someone involved in this has learned about who they are, is threatening to expose them unless they drop the case. But that's not going to distract Sugar. He tracks Olivia down to the home of Senator Pavage's son, Ryan. Tough beat for those of us named Ryan, because this guy is a sadistic killer who apparently tortures people and then ends up killing himself when he's discovered. And the episode ends with Sugar finding Olivia locked under the stairs. So,
yes.
No, good job by Sugar hiding the fact that he's an alien from Melanie. She has no worries about that.
Must be a pretty temporary thing.
Yeah, very temporary injection, overnight thing that he can hide. So we're learning a lot about this group, who they are, what they apparently do, why they don't want Sugar to apparently find Olivia, and that they've been called back home, as it were. So how do we sort of pick up with this one? Where should we start?
I mean, let's start there, because they say they've been called back. I guess we don't have any reason to disbelieve.
Yeah.
But
that typewriter is some kind of space messenger thing that they've
communicated. Yeah, we see the typewriter. Let's start with that, right? So early on in the episode, we see Ruby's typewriter, and it's got like a 20-sided die on it that goes boobity 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 boop. And apparently that's how they communicate with homeworld, or I don't know if the mothership's, you know, on the dark side of the moon or what.
Yep.
Thinking about, like, why was Sugar looking at the moon the first episode? You know, maybe the ship's up there. Whatever it is, as I read this, one of the things I appreciate about the show is it does make us piece things together and draw some inferences to really follow the action. You know, this is how I interpret it, that in the early scene where we see Ruby and Miller and the typewriter, that the message they get at that point is mission's off, you know. And so then Ruby says to Miller, you know, try not to hurt John or whatever, you know. If you read it that way, then what Miller's doing is to try to talk to John and tell him the mission's off, I guess, when he shows up at the motel room. Not something more nefarious than that. I mean, I thought this worked relatively well, but there are some things to think through here. What did they know? When did they know it? What did Ruby know? And when did Ruby know it?
Yeah.
And
I like the point that you're making here, because say what you will about this show, and certainly there's been some criticism and some thoughts of, wow, you know, that kind of twist is just too wild, whatever you may say. There's a version of this show that takes this seventh episode, and all it is 6 years ago, this
exposition,
you know, explains the aliens coming and what their mission is and what they're doing and why they're here and all of that. And they don't do that. They, as you said, force you to draw your own conclusions, which I did like about this episode quite a bit. We need to make those inferences. We need to put those pieces together and figure out, even with all of that information that we do have or do try to gather, what is making Sugar separate from the idea that they've all bought into that, but he isn't right now.
Yeah. Right, so a number of things there. Why is he so invested in this Olivia case? He's told us, but we don't understand.
Yeah.
We need more information to understand something about Jen, something about his sister, right?
Yeah.
But we don't. That's all we have.
Yeah.
So apparently they've gotten the message to give up permission. And then Henry is willing to tell Sugar what he knows. Now, in fairness to Henry, he at least says he just found this stuff out.
Yes.
He just found out that they've been blackmailed as a group, these powerful people, Senator Pavich and others, I don't know,
Yeah.
have been blackmailing them. And that's why they've been trying to get Sugar to drop the case, because there's this threat of exposure. That makes sense, right? And Sugar himself says in voiceover, he gets that.
Yeah.
But one question is, I don't know, is the mission really off? What was the mission in the first place?
Yeah. If this is a, you referenced this in your piece on the site, if this is a traditional sort of alien trope, this is, I guess, the reconnaissance team. They've come
Right.
to embed themselves and learn as much as they possibly can about the human race. Are they only here in America? That would seem sort of short-sighted. Are they other
No.
places? So, yeah, what that would be the sort of the most logical theme of what they're doing.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I'm kind of sort of interrupted you there. I'll fill in. I'll fill in.
Okay.
So, in light of this episode, I found myself thinking, I know I've seen this Pavich's guy's name in earlier episodes. I
Yeah.
know I have. Where did I see it? I recall the campaign sign, but anyway, I went back and I was sort of rewatching from the beginning. And I didn't rewatch the entire season, but I watched rewatched the first couple episodes. And I did, notice a couple of things that I think are worth mentioning.
Yeah.
One is that you just made me think of. When Sugar comes back from Japan, he tells Ruby that he ran into one
Ah.
of their associates in Japan whose group had dissolved or something and
Okay.
invited him to come to
Okay.
California.
Interesting. Okay, I had not remembered that.
Me neither. So that's in there, right? I don't really know what to do with that in retrospect. This group dissolves? What?
Yeah.
They just decide, hey, we're gonna just, seep into the population, or what's the deal with that, right? Pavich's name is on campaign signs. Pavich's name is on Ruby's computer screen when she's erasing records on Stallings. And this other little bit, I think it's in episode two. Do you remember the Sugar was being tailed by a car and he didn't know what it was, and he knew it wasn't Kenny and Davey.
Right.
And he tells Ruby it was a gray Volkswagen. And then I think they just dropped that.
Yeah, we never heard anything about it.
So now I'm wondering, does that connect to Pavich? Does the disappearance of Clifford's body
Yeah.
connect to Pavich?
I'm gonna need the you sort of try to talk yourself through this as you wrote your piece this week, but I'm gonna have to get start an intervention with you on the Clifford body thing. I don't think we're gonna get there.
No, but Ed, what happened to Charlie? So all of these things,
Yes, Charlie's a big
and
question mark right now. Yes.
they've only got one episode left in the season, so I don't know how well they're gonna be able to tie all this together. I have faith in the show,
Yeah.
honestly, to do a good job, but how much closure are we gonna get versus how much closure are we not gonna get is
Right.
always a question when it's the end of season one, and presumably they want to make season two.
Yes, yeah. And I can see we have no news about a season two at this point, not even any speculation that I'm aware of. I can see, without knowing what happens next week, not watched yet, a world where Sugar has gotten himself so emotionally and physically and mentally involved in the work that he does that he refuses to go with the group. And so there's something that sets up a season two where, we can't leave a man behind when he's, trying to adapt to this and they're trying to get him back. Well, to something like that. But you're right in the fact that would all need to come after some pretty fundamental questions are answered next week. At least I hope so.
Yeah, and probably the first one is Olivia still alive?
Yes.
Because we saw her alive under those stairs earlier in the episode. And then presumably Ryan Pavich coming for her. Presumably it was him. We see his hands and gloves,
Yep.
But then at the end of the episode, we just Sugar opens it up and he says Olivia, but we're not given any further information.
Yeah.
So
He apparently took her out of there, had his gloves on. He has some sort of torture chamber in his basement of his house. Has he done something to her? We don't know. We've seen a bunch of videos. Is she on the videos? We're gonna have to hopefully find that out.
Sugar takes one of them. I don't know that I really want to see those videos, but
No.
I guess as a curious
Yeah, and
television
I
viewer,
guess,
I do, but
is there more tied into that than just this guy, Ryan Pavich, was getting girls trafficked to him from Stallings, and he's doing despicable things to them? You know, is there a bigger sort of conspiracy than that, or is this just sort of the start and end of it? That's what I'm unclear of.
Yeah, and so is she alive or dead? She could be dead.
Yeah.
That'd be a bummer, but narratively, I could see it, right? Another question is, who all knows about the aliens, and how did they find out? I mean, I guess one possibility is maybe they found out through whatever Ryan's been doing, like one of the women that he got down there, he starts, doing whatever, poking around, and oh, she turns blue. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's also a setup for season two. Is there this, there's some left behind, and there are people that know about them. How do we silence them? What do we do with that information? That could potentially set up something. Yeah.
Yeah, the two big ones that I could predict speculatively would be option A, the mission's only off in the sense that it's time to call back the reconnaissance folks and bring
Yeah.
in the invasion.
Yep.
I don't know that it's going to go in that way. The other option that comes to mind is Sugar is so pissed off that now he needs to take down these nasty, powerful people who did this to Olivia or something like that. I don't know.
Ooh. I'm trying to think how much Olivia resolution will we get beyond just alive or dead? How much will they want to explain how her story connects to the mission alien story? And also, as you've alluded to in several places, what does, if anything, does her family have to do with that piece of the story? We just left them at Davy's funeral. What will happen to them moving forward? And do they connect? We'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, and the other big question there that remains is something they have kept reminding us of: what's going on with those Polaroids of Rachel K, and how does that fit in, right? They've had
Exactly.
a
We haven't
through
seen that
line
in a
there.
while. Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't been all that long. I mean, what episode was it when Sugar goes to Jonathan's house and he's in Lorraine's preserved room, and he basically notices that the Polaroids were taken in that room. That was maybe two episodes ago or something like
Yeah,
that.
that's
The
exactly
show's
right. Yep.
kind of reminded us of that kind of thing, and the Seagulls are still around. Davy is dead. They have the memorial service, and now finally, Bernie thinks, man, maybe Olivia's not okay because even if she was on a drug bender, she wouldn't have missed this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a, I think, a very, we've always wondered, speculated what levels of involvement different members of the family had. And Jonathan always believing she was missing. Bernie always thinking, ah, it's off on Bender. But now he's convinced after what's happened to Davey that she's not there, that yeah, something's wrong. And, unless he's just doing a good job hiding it, doesn't have any concept of what has happened to her.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Which I always kind of believed Bernie when he was saying that he believed that Olivia was fine and just, off on a drug bender.
Yeah.
I always kind of bought that, but there was a possibility that he was hiding something with regard to that that I think this more or less dispels. He really doesn't know. So how is that going to factor in as well? Because one way or another, Sugar, the team has found Olivia. She's either alive or she's dead. But one way or another, now her family's going to find out.
Yeah.
Omni is going to find out, and all of that. So that's another narrative arc. That's one that I'm sure that they'll round off, as it
Yeah,
were,
I think
next
so.
week.
I definitely think so. Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of things that it would do a disservice if they don't. The Olivia, all those big Olivia questions, I think, are certainly part of that.
So that's the big question, I guess, is as we conclude the Olivia arc here, presumably, what opens up from there? And there are a number of things we've just mentioned in terms of possibilities for where the ship would go from here.
Yeah. There are. If they provide resolution there, the conflict of go, don't go, of, maybe I have learned so much about what it means to be a human from being here and watching all of these movies that I want to actually stay here, even though it can be exhausting. This could go a couple different places.
Yeah, maybe we should talk about that a little bit more and the exchange that he has with Henry about this, where Sugar keeps saying they're not supposed to hurt people, right?
Yep.
And that should be in the background, I think, when Henry asks him, did you need to hurt those people? Did you need to kill those people?
Yeah.
Right? Because then we can also think about his previous exchange with Ruby when she's reading from the notebook, right? He's supposed to be providing objective descriptions of human of interactions and so on, and instead he's talking about how UFO is an underrated rock band. That was a hint in
Yeah, right,
retrospect.
exactly.
That
All
was
these
a hint.
hints.
Lots of hints. Anyhow, they're not supposed to hurt people. Well, then, one thing that's kind of weird here is why is he a PI in the first place?
Yeah. Why not just give him a job as a, grocery store clerk or something, and he's not gonna
Henry's an anthropology professor.
Yeah.
That makes more sense, I'm at risk of jumping around a little bit too much, but
Maybe his job is to try to determine the motivations and the what people want and why they want it. Why, what will they, what means will they go to? What will they do to find something or get something they need?
I mean, I guess it could make some sense insofar as it's an entry point into the darkness of humanity, what's going on in terms of crime
Yeah,
and
yeah.
all of that, okay, so perhaps that's information they want.
Yep.
Again, big question in the background, why? But they're not supposed to hurt people. Sugar admits to Henry that well, he had to kill those first two people. That really was self-defense.
Yeah.
He killed Stallings because he wanted him dead. That was
Yes.
ultimately when it came down to it. He killed Stallings because he wanted him
Yes.
dead. And Henry worries that about them becoming too human, right? He
Yeah,
has
it's
that
at
line
that
about.
point that that sort of line's been crossed. You have moved from whatever we are to this is a human emotion, human reaction. That worries him, I think.
Yeah, which led me to wonder, okay, is the conclusion humanity is so dark and bad that we're warranted in like invading the planet and taking it over,
Exactly.
And if it's not that, what is the mission? Is it are is Henry's job a clue? Are the aliens at large just anthropologists?
Yeah.
Just studying humanity just
Yeah.
for like
I mean,
knowledge? I mean, I guess it's
I do
possible.
think that he is, yeah, that Henry, as an anthropology professor, is a representation of what they are doing. That is their job, to study this species in the habitat as best they can.
Yeah. So maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe they really are benevolent,
Could be. Could be.
So we'll see what happens next
Yeah.
week. I'm looking forward to
One
it. I
episode
meant
at a
to
time.
look and see if the episode was going to be longer, and I actually haven't yet, so.
I have not either. They've all been pretty consistent at 30 minutes or right around 30 minutes. So we'll see.
The first one was longer.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the last one might also be longer. I wouldn't be surprised because it seems to me like they've got a lot of work to do in the
Yeah.
season finale. So, but I have been
Those.
appreciating the episode link. I appreciate the show's efficient,
Yeah.
and I
Doesn't try
appreciate
to
that.
do too much, even when it intercuts some of these old movies. They seem to be the right amount and the appropriate pieces.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Anything else you want to hit on before we wrap this one up?
This looks great. Looking forward to one more episode.
All right. Cool. So we'll leave it there. Again, we'll be back next week to talk about the season one finale of Sugar, episode 8. Hopefully it's just season one finale. Maybe we can hit on that briefly. Again, we mentioned there've been some stuff in the news. I don't know how much you've seen. The one thing I think on Vulture is claiming like, oh, they shouldn't have left this as a twist. It would have been better if we'd known at the very beginning. I don't know if I agree with that personally. Do you?
I don't either for a couple of reasons. Number one, like I said, I've seen, since the twist has come at the timeline of the public airing of the episode, been a lot of chatter about it,
Yeah, a
positive
lot.
and negative, but a lot of chatter about it. But also just to, for the interesting, there was an appreciation for the show as a homage, as a real, I think solid representation of the noir genre. And so it does a couple of really good things, but I think they had to set that stage first before they did that twist.
I think so. Or, I
Yeah.
mean, maybe I'm just a pervert or something, but I find it very enjoyable that in light of this episode, I did find myself compelled to, like, wait, let's go back to, and I was enjoying, I got through the first couple episodes. I didn't make the time to rewatch all of it this past week, but I was kind of enjoying how, well, if I'm watching it a second time with this knowledge, then it's a bit different. And I kind of enjoy that structure personally. I think if they just told us from the very beginning, it wouldn't be as good of a show.
Yeah,
That's my
completely
opinion.
agree.
But people are free to disagree. People are free to publish articles on Vulture and spoil the show with the picture. Anyway, I don't know if you saw that, but they're going quite far. They're like,
Yeah.
they should have revealed this at the beginning. I'm going to spoil it for you. Headline, photo of Colin Farrell as a blue alien. Anyhow, hopefully you all have been enjoying watching Sugar. Hopefully you've been enjoying listening along to what we've had to say about it. We'll be back next week for the season finale. Hopefully it's just a season finale. We'll have our eyes out for possible season two renewals. Sometimes they happen right away, sometimes not. Anyhow, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do leave us a good rating, review. If you're on YouTube, give a thumbs up, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Or if you're not on YouTube, go to YouTube, subscribe to the
Yeah.
YouTube channel. I'd appreciate it. Do
Yeah,
me a solid, go to YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can follow TVObsessive.com on social media, search for TV Obsessive on Facebook, X, Blue Sky, Threads, Instagram, Mastodon, sort of. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
all right, looking forward to the finale.